Welcome to Webcology. Webcology is the show that takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Our guides will take you on a journey into web marketing and bring you the experts and the information so that you can further explore the web marketing world. Now, here are the hosts of Webcology, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome to Webcology on WMR.fm. It is the 13th of January, 2022. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing. Dave is here, man. He's in the house. Happy 2022, Dave.
Yeah, and thank you. Happy 2022 to you as well. A shame to have not been able to be in our like introductory one, but I hear you had a good show. Heard that through the grapevine.
It was a fun show. Christine sat in. We talked about a whole bunch of stuff that's happening around the web. It's a weird show going into 2022 with the Omicron outbreak and feels like Groundhog Day all over again.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to do a show on mental health in the industry, and it's almost seemed like every show that we do has some weird mental health angle these days, because I got to tell you, these are hard times. I mean, I don't know about you. I know that you and Mary just went through an Omicron burst. Me and Sean just went through one. It's hard times for people, right?
Yeah, it's not fun.
How are you guys doing?
I got it really, really light. I was very, very fortunate. I had a cough and felt a little tired, right? Like just the literal definition when they go, and this one can be mild. I was that. Mary did not fare quite as well, but is pleasantly on the mend now. So, and you guys did okay?
I had a similar experience. We had a similar experience. I was double vaxxed and boosted all Moderna. Or Spikevax. I love the name Spikevax. It's like the punk rock vaccine. And I would have gotten boosted 10 to 14 days before I think I was exposed. So I was probably as protected as possible. Shauna, on the other hand, not so much. She's only been double vaxxed. I think she was double vaxxed with Pfizer. But she was too young to get the booster shot in Ontario when I got mine. I got a cold sore and I felt tired, like listless for a couple days. She went through a debilitating flu where she could, barely breathe and get out of bed. And for 4 or 5 days, she was worried about having to go to the hospital. Her dad's in the hospital right now with COVID, in a pretty precarious place. So it's a weird time.
Well, I'm glad you're both okay, at least.
Yeah, we've come out the other end, but terrified of going back in again.
Yeah, yeah. And ironically, just for on the humor side of it, as I was just about to be crossing out of my, now I can come out of quarantine zone, I get a text message going, "You're now eligible for a booster." Like, come on, come on.
Well. Go get that booster. I'm telling you, if I didn't have my booster, I'm shudder to think of what my experience would have been like.
Yes, I will. I am going to hold off for a little bit because they do say probably wait about a month after. So I'll be holding off for another few weeks.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
but now you're
of eligible age.
And now I'm allowed.
Yeah.
So a lot's happened. A lot's now I've
happened
missed
2 weeks. Yeah, well, a lot happens in 2 weeks, eh?
Mm-hmm.
There's apparently 2 or 3 days ago, there was another Google rankings update or a search ranking update. We live in a time, like one of the things we talked about last year, which is how much change happened, last week, I should say, is how much change happened in 2021 and what the implications of those changes might be over 2022. And It's an interesting conversation. And I don't know if you heard the Search Off the Record podcast, John Mueller, Gary Ease, and Martin Split.
You know what? Because I listen to it while I go running, and I haven't been allowed out.
Harsh. Okay. Listen to the most recent one. I think it was 2 days ago that they released it. It was interesting conversation about how much information Google should give out about core updates and whether they should give information that a core update is happening at all. Cool conversation. And, you know, as in most things SEO, the lines over who thinks what mightn't go the way you think they do. For instance, okay. Gary Ives appears to want to give as much information as possible about a core update. He seems very, very frustrated with Google's current modus operandi, which is to say, we're starting a core update a week from now, and then several weeks later to say, remember that core update? It's done now. That's it. That's what you get from them, right?
Right. Yeah.
In the podcast, in the conversation between Gary, Martin, and John, Gary says pretty much straight out, his team knows what's in the core update and what it's supposed to do. They understand why they made it and why it's being implemented. It probably comes down to something Google's already said. Build good content. Don't buy links. Don't try to fool our algorithms. This is how we suggest you structure your site, etc. Right? They've given great advisement on what webmasters should do. They've given an ample advisement over the years. And usually the core updates are all about implementing those ideas one way or another. Mm-hmm. And the guys who write them, the engineers who write them, they know what the update's about. But again, Google's rule, in-house rule is, we tell them when it starts, we tell them when it stops, period. So Gary's like, well, either we should tell them everything or we should tell them nothing, because what's the point? You know, it's just dumb. Then there's just a whole bunch of speculation and people go off in wrong directions and time is wasted, etc., right?
Yeah.
John comes in and says, well, you know, webmasters at least want confirmation that what they're seeing is real. You know, we can't not tell them something's happening when something is clearly happening, right?
Well, you know what? I disagree, but only in a, I've seen them do it before. So clearly they can not tell us something even when we all see something's happening, but they shouldn't. You're right. And I think that's what he was getting at.
Anyway, it's a very cool conversation. And it's only like 4 or 5 minutes long, but in that time, little bon mots of information get dropped. Martin Split, for instance, admitting straight up that Google has trouble with JavaScript. Should they, if their core update covers the JavaScript, should they talk about that or not? Well, how will webmasters react to a little bit of information without context, eh?
Right. Well, and that's a pretty critical one, I would say at least anyway, is if they go, oh, we've dramatically improved our rendering systems, you might not need pre-rendering now. Test it and let us know if you can't. That would be one where I would go, yes, you shouldn't let us try and figure that out because we won't know, because we won't test it, because we won't know that we can test it. To your point, I think, and to Martin. So that's an example where they 100% should go into great detail as far as this is what we have done. What do you think? Do you think Google, you were around in like the early 2000s. You were an SEO in the late 90s. You saw what SEOs did. You remember the green toolbar page rank bar and what that did, right? Like how damaging that was to Google to give that piece of information out. What do you think they can be forthright, or do you think that basically all they can do is sort of go, yeah, we're fighting spam. Like that's it. Like there's an update. You know, John says we should, you know, at least notify us that a core update's going on or something. Great. Yeah, there is one. Maybe extend it to with Gary. Yeah, we're fighting spam. Do you think they can give us much more detail than that, or will we break things if they do?
Well, this is the quandary, isn't it? Yes, we will break things with just a little teeny bit of information, but not all of us will. Some of us will try to build better things with that little bit of information. I like to think that one of the messages of this show has always been, Google gives you information. Here's how you use it in a way that benefits you, and how you avoid using it in a way that doesn't benefit you. Because that's what it really comes down to, eh? Either what you're doing is going to be beneficial or non-beneficial. Google has said quite clearly how they want to see information structured, how they want to be fed information. And I don't know. I don't think they've been terribly complicated or opaque about it. They just haven't come right out and said, here's the secret sauce. But in the game, in the very high pressure world that we live in, every inch, every centimeter is monitored and hard fought for, and could actually be worth thousands and thousands of dollars a day in relevant traffic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you give in that kind of environment, a little bit of information will cause people to try just about anything to improve their situation. Can Google give a better representation of what they're doing without causing a stampede? Probably. But it's been, what, 15 years since Florida? since the Florida update? And I don't think they've quite found that framework yet.
Right.
It's been long enough. It's been 20 years since Florida. Again, they haven't found the framework of how they give the information to people yet. Without us stomping all over it, we're trying to make wine out of grapes.
Yeah, and we are. That's exactly what we're trying to do. So I think it's interesting to hear them debate it. It's funny. I haven't listened to it, but I've read that little bit of the story. And knowing that they're discussing it is interesting. But it is funny where, you know, there is no right answer. Once again, like every SEO question, it depends, right? Like, it depends on the update. In something like, okay, core update, we can now render JavaScript properly. They should actually be quite out there and go, here's exactly what's going on. here's exactly what we're doing. Here's exactly what, and okay, there's a couple little black hat things you could get really creative and probably do with that. But for the most part, being really, really clear on this is what's going on. This is technically what's going on. This is how you need to crawl us, right? Or this is how you now need to like make sure your JavaScript is functioning when we crawl you. This is what happens. Whereas if it's an update to go, oh, okay, this is how the different pieces of our machine work. We've done a show long enough, regular listeners will know, all of our brains just light up and go, oh, okay. A, how can I use that? And then B, how can it be abused? Right? Like, even if I'm not planning on abusing it, how can it be abused? Like, we've all been doing this long enough to go, how can it be abused? If nothing else, to go, can it last? Right? Like, can this last? Or what are my competitors maybe going to do? Or what's, you know, just academically interesting to go, how could you wreck this? So too much detail in a lot of areas gets, I think, a little gray. Basically, that's my long-winded way of saying I sympathize. There is no one-size-fits-all answer for all of them. So I think John's gone with the safest in all scenarios. We can tell you when it starts and stops. I do think a little more detail along Gary's line of just like, this is kind of the area we're trying to look at least would be handy. So we're not all sort of like trying to figure out what's going on, but at least go, oh, okay, you're fighting spam. Okay, now I can look at the pages that dropped and go, why would they think that's spam? Right, and those sorts of things. But.
Well, one of the reasons I think it's really important that Google be more transparent. I'm definitely on the side of give more information on what's happening and try to create a better standard for people to adhere to, because we'll build a better web that way. Mm-hmm. Assumably. It could be that Google has its own evil, terribly evil reasons for suggesting we do this, that, or whatnot. But I'm going to go with they probably want a smoother functioning machine. Mm-hmm. That's the most likely reason they suggest these things. But the important thing is people invest time, money, expectations, etc. in trying to do the right things for their clients or for their businesses or websites or whatever. SEO, latest release, for instance, had a poll asking SEOs where they're going to be throwing their priority, where they're going to be throwing their energy in 2022. Now, Google's been really clear. They say if there's a core update that happens, there's nothing you can do about it, except maybe improve the content. Because it always comes back to content. Every piece of advice around updates comes back to content, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the two major articles about podcasts, the Search Off the Record podcast of last week, the one that was in Search Engine Journal by Matt Southern, or the one at SE Roundtable by Barry Schwartz, both of the articles come back to Google's advisements on there's nothing you can do technically or with your website during a core update because, well, it's a moving target. You're probably not going to, you know, but it's probably about content. Mm-hmm. So the only thing you can do is improve the quality of content. So, Alita has this a survey. 55.3% of SEOs are throwing their energy towards content this year. 23.7% are going to go towards technical SEO, 17.1% towards link building. I think it's worth mentioning the two things in this conversation, the poll and the conversation between John Martin and Gary.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all about clarity. This is where people are putting their energy, their time, their efforts, and how to say it. We're not all pulling in the same direction for the same team to build a better web. That's idealistic and silly. But in a way, we are, because we're all making the same machine or working on the same platform. And Google wants to advise on how to build the best platform, and it seems to always turn back to content, which is what they've said quite clearly. So they should be more transparent about it and how to do this. Why one set of content is better than another set, more detailed. What in the detail? What in the richness? Why does Google decide this is better than that? I know it's quite complicated, but I think if given details of what the core updates are trying to accomplish, we'll get better at figuring out how to help them accomplish it.
Yeah, indeed. Now, one thing that I found interesting about that survey as well, like just to like touch on, I think what you're alluding to, like we're not all pulling in the same direction, but we sort of are at the same time. It was interesting because when I looked at how the breakdown and sort of like the wisdom of the masses, right? Because I looked and went, oh, okay, 55.3% content, 23.7 technical, 17.1, you know, links, and then another, you know, 3.8. I'm like, yeah, that actually sounds like a good breakdown of a campaign. Okay, let's break down my resource allocation about like that. Most of it to content, but some good, healthy, like technical architecture sort of stuff. And yeah, about 17% of my time should be spent link building, right? Or the resource allocation. And then there's going to be some other miscellaneous stuff that comes up. So that gets 4%. So at the same time, I looked at that list and went, okay, each person's only answering once, but on the whole, actually looks like a pretty decent resource allocation for a lot of campaigns. Just to break it down in roughly the percentages that I'm looking at in the latest poll.
Yeah, if you got to be doing your time planning, that's not a bad way to break it down. 55% good content, 20% towards technical SEO, and another 20% towards link building. That leaves you with 5%, which you can use to smoke drugs or drink as much as you possibly want.
Right. Maybe, I don't know whether that's before or after the link building, but probably somewhere in there.
Oh, definitely after the link building. Don't do it before. So if you smoke a joint before link building, you're not doing link building. Like, you're just not going to. You're going to walk away from it and go play video games or chase butterflies in the backyard. Something infinitely more fun than link building, right?
Probably. That's
so
true.
So don't do it. Big pro tip. Don't smoke pot and do SEO at the same time. Well, don't do link building anyway. Also, if you are going to be smoking pot or drinking while on the job, which a lot of people are doing now that everyone's working from home, don't write content because Google might have a hard time understanding it. Mm-hmm. You see, there was a fun piece a couple days ago, Barry wrote in Search Engine Roundtable about fluff content. Just craptastic content that people put up just to write about something.
Yep. We've all read it.
Yeah, I think I suspect many of us have written much of it as well. Just, you know, sometimes our jobs require us to be content factories. And I remember I had a job where I had to write about bathtubs. Probably used this example on the show before, but God, it was terrible. That was fluff content. For years, SEOs have been worrying about duplicate content, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you should worry about duplicate content because Google doesn't want to rank 10 examples of exactly the same thing.
Right.
But often it's not the duplicate content on a page, in a paragraph, in a description or whatever that gets the website called out. It's that Google doesn't understand why that content is being used in that context when there's other content that could be used, or it's not really meshing with other stuff it finds on the site or around the same page. It's obviously fluff. And often that fluff is very similar to fluff found all around the web because everyone probably is in paste and uses and steals from each other. And that's more likely to be confused with duplicate content to get you your knuckles wrapped.
Yeah, and when you think about it, like, doesn't it absolutely make sense too? Because that's one of those scenarios where they can go, and even if I'm wrong in my assessment that this is duplicate content, it's still fluff. you could go, it's one of those, even if I'm wrong, I'm still making the right conclusion on whether something should happen, i.e. should I show this in a search result or not? Do we need another, I don't know, to pick on eHow again, like years after they got like their knuckles wrapped, but like, do I need another eHow on how to bake a potato, right? Like, no, I don't. I think it makes sense. It's one of those, didn't surprise me, but I guess they had to say it sort of stories.
Google has come right out and pretty much said that they don't really care about duplicate content. They're not going to promote you for that content, but they probably won't demote you for it either. It's the pattern of providing craptastic stuff that nobody needs. And it's not even that you're getting demoted. You're not. You're just getting ignored. Somebody's providing better stuff and they're getting promoted.
You know, it's funny to hear you. It's funny to hear you say that, because as you say it, I'm like, oh, the longer we're doing our job, like in this podcast, and the longer we're SEOs, the more we start to sound like I used to mock Google. Like, it's not a sandbox; it just looks like one. Where it's like, and you're right; you're 100% right. And I would have said it exactly the same as you did, and it's 100% right. But like, it's not that they're demoting you; it's just that they're ignoring you. And it's like, but that's, if you're you in that scenario, it sure feels exactly the same. feeling of that is going to be the same.
But here's the thing. If you want to hear it that way, then you're like the four-year-old having a tantrum in the sandbox.
Right.
What I hear is, oh, shoot, somebody has written something better than me, so I got to get back to the table and write something better than them. And that's that's it, right? Like, that's how you got to look at the Google's not stopping you. And maybe we're all just so sad we're not getting the great Google's attention.
Easy.
We don't work for Google. Google doesn't work for us. It's just a platform. It's only a platform. But the platform has rules. Now, there's a way to climb that mountain. And if you climb it the wrong way, you're going to fall down and break your head open, which is, you know, gross and messy and not beneficial for anybody, really.
Yeah.
But if you climb the mountain right, you'll probably climb the mountain right.
Right. And if you don't, well, then all your competitors thank you. So that's good.
Indeed. Hard, cold. Somebody earlier today sort of accused me of working for Google because I said something quite negative about Google on Facebook. Heavens, huh?
Oh.
And so they suggested that I was, you know, coming out of my culture of fear because I'm often telling people what Google said.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it just blows my mind. So the thing I said negative about Google, and you know what, I want to say this publicly, I am. Google's doing something really evil. Surprise, surprise. And it's not a surprise, but it's really disappointing to me. You remember a couple of years ago when there was the tech spring, sort of, and in 2018.
After the holidays, there's so much to clean up and get ready for the coming year. This leaves me exhausted and a lot of things falling off my to-do list. It's time to lock in, and Omaha Steaks delivers everything you crave to reset after the holidays. An order from them means having high-quality Omaha Steaks on hand at all times. I'm a big meat lover myself, and I always go with medium rare, but there's also plenty of poultry and other options available. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of expertise in the meat industry. Let Omaha Steaks deliver high-quality proteins right to your door. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their end-of-season sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to www.omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide during their end-of-season sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. Thanks to Omaha Steaks for sponsoring us.
This is pre-COVID times, but when tech workers were stepping off the job because their companies weren't living up to their expectations around rape culture, sexism, promotions, racism, etc.
Yeah.
Are you looking for the best in WordPress speed, security, and scalability? WP Engine is a digital experience platform for WordPress, powering digital experiences for large brands around the world. With easy-to-use site management tools and powerful do-it-your-way development features, WP Engine gives you the flexibility to build it your way. Improve your SEO and conversion rates with a faster site on WP Engine. Learn more on WPEngine.com.
Well, this really, really freaked out the tech companies. It scared the heck out of them. Not that the tech companies are bad necessarily, but I mean, scale. These corporations are so massive that when you could, Larry and Sergey are not bad people. They're actually very conscious. I don't think that either are misogynist creeps, personally. I don't know that, but I just don't think they are. But when misogyny is raised as an issue at a corporation as large as Google, there's going to be a great deal of weirdness in that behemoth's reaction to the accusation. There's going to be positive stuff and negative stuff and bad reactions and, you know, good reactions, etc., right?
Yeah.
This is a bad reaction. I'm going to describe a bad reaction. Project Vivian, it was written about in yesterday's version of Ars Technica. Google went out of their way to hire a union-busting consultant company under the name Project Vivian basically to engage employees more positively and convince them that unions suck. Now, we know this happened because Google's in front of the National Labor Relations Board, and a judge at the NLRB, Paul Bogus, unfortunate name, has demanded Google release documents about their relationship with the union busting consultants. This is the problem for me, and I think it should be a problem for people in the tech sector, because how to say this? The tech behemoths are the size of governments and making decisions about information and the information environment that we live in. The people who work for them have to have a say over the hows and whys of that work, or we, the public itself, have no say over it. You know what I mean? They're private corporations. There's nothing we can do as the public. But there's thousands and thousands and thousands of tech workers that act as our proxies. And Google and many of the other tech companies are trying to suppress them from doing that. That's how I see the story.
It's a fair way to see it.
Sorry?
I said that's a fair way to see it.
I think so. I know there's other ways to see it. You cannot, you know, give... There's a reason we have boards of directors and management structures. There's a reason why that we have decisions by process rather than decisions by the mob. That all that makes all those are perfect counter arguments.
Right. I tend to lean, but you know what? And this gets into like just personal leanings, right? Like I tend to lean to the if there's a massive you know, power and equity between one side and another in a negotiation, it becomes unfair. So balancing off that power structure, i.e. I have the money, i.e. we have the labor, together we need to work to make sure that this entire behemoth continues on. See, I look at it more from that standpoint when we're talking about unions in this case. And so yeah. I do tend to go, if it was going to naturally form, it should naturally form. If it was just going to die on the table, it should die on the table, right? Like workers should decide whether they want to or not. But anyway, that does get, I understand the massive complexities that opens up and that there are people who are incredibly intelligent and well-meaning who will disagree with me and assume that hopefully I'm intelligent and well-meaning. We're just going to disagree on whether unions are the way to get there. But you and I think, do tend to agree on this one. Although in this instance, we like different aspects of it.
Indeed. Indeed. There's most certainly a power dynamic, a disparity, and the way government is dealing with it is to come down with the threat of regulation. But it's almost like do things the way we want you to do them, or we're going to regulate them, regulate you, like make these results happen, or we'll regulate you. And that's wrong. That's I don't want to see government get involved like that. I'm terrified of seeing government get involved like that, mostly because our government up here in Canada, the government in the United States, well-meaning people who really don't seem to understand how the machine works,
right?
Like at all. And I'm terrified of people who don't understand how the machine works trying. Like, there's a reason I don't drive a car. I know how an internal combustion engine works, but I just don't pay enough attention to be trusted with a car. I feel that way about government. They just don't understand how the machine should work, so they shouldn't drive the machine of technology. But there has to be a mechanism where people can affect, you know, how these behemoths that really run our world evolve.
That's a unique and very compelling argument you could make, Jim. You could send you in there and go, guys, unions are your defense against government regulation.
It's true, though. I mean, I know that somebody somewhere in the depths of Google is listening to this podcast, and then they have a machine listening to it. Keyword emergency. Really, you guys should pay attention to this. It might save your companies a half decade from now. Okay. So end of that rant.
Where shall we go now?
Well, we can go to the use of machetes as a tool of SEO.
Sounds good.
You know what? Here's what I think we should go to before because there's an article over at Search Engine Journal by Ludwig Mackham, and I hope I'm not mispronouncing his name. I apologize. It's about it's a guide to using Cloudflare for SEO. Mm. And I want more, like, yo, editors at SEJ, if you're listening, more of this sort of stuff, please. This is a definite must read if you're working with like sites that are distributing over content management systems content distribution systems, CDNs. Definitely worth the read.
And that's funny. I haven't read it. And now I'm like, well, now I need to go and add that to my bookmarks. I don't know how I missed that one, but
I think it was published about an hour and a half ago. It was. I think it went up earlier today. But if anybody over at SEJ is listening, and we know they will be next week, this is the kind of stuff that is really, really long-term useful for the industry.
Well, that's interesting. And your friend of mine, Detlev, had also posted, and this was, but it was over on Search Engine Land is where my like hiccup was, and it was yesterday, a piece on Cloudflare and using Cloudflare web page test for your to improve your core web vitals, or rather to A/B test improvements on your core web vitals. So I was heading to the wrong story, and I'm like, oh, but clearly that's a hot topic right now.
Absolutely. And if Detlev put something up at Search Engine Land, I haven't actually. It was a rush to get to air today. I didn't actually see the article at Search Engine Land. If Detlev published something there, absolutely. Yeah. Like, unquestionably worth the read.
Yeah, he's a smart guy. Okay, and now I've got another one to read. So, perfect. But I will save that until after our show today for our listeners so that I don't have to listen to me reading it out loud.
Another one that came up just a few minutes ago, quote from John Mueller, search quality guidelines were never written for SEOs. Why do you think he had to say that again today?
I don't know. I saw that and I'm like, well, that's it. It would just be like two words. It depends if you were writing it for SEOs, then just move on. Right. But, I think if I'm going to guess what his inspiration in making that declaration was, it's probably that I do find that SEOs often get a little too granular when they're looking at it and sort of like, it says this, so that, right? Like, so if it says one thing, then that means that something else must be happening at Google. That's not really how that document, in my opinion, should be interpreted. It's meant to like view it as a whole, take in what you can in principles, but it's not meant to be any sort of guideline. Like, it's not a guideline for SEOs. It's a guideline for what they're trying to look for in quality. But that's all it is. It's not a recipe for how to write content.
You know why I think he felt he had to write that in Twitter today?
Why is that?
Because of dumbass questions like this. This is covered in SE Roundtable, and it's one of those I can't understand why. There might be logic here, so please, if there is, explain it to me like I'm five, because I don't get it myself. But Gary, John Mueller had to respond to somebody asking if they should block countries with slower internet access, because when they looked at those countries through the core web vital scores, they were skewing core web vitals, you see, because their access, they make the site is slow when accessed from there.
Yeah. I saw that one and I actually had to give it that's an interesting hypothesis. Like I wouldn't have necessarily thought to even test that. But what I imagine their anchor is on that in principle, and it makes sense logically to me, for a user to look and run their core web vitals and look at the way the metrics are presented and go, okay, we have our lab data and we have our field data. So we have what Google sees when they run it, and then we have our what the average user around the web is going to be experiencing. And understanding that Google clearly has access to both, and they're going through the resource allocation to go, we're actually going to collect this data from the web as a whole. And then consider to yourself, if there's places that have slow access and they're slowing down that field data, might it be better to just block that from even making it into the field data? As an idea of going, oh, okay, if I have a subset of my data that is just fundamentally flawed or is going to fundamentally pull down my average, should I get rid of it? A lot like a school would, I'm not saying to do this, schools, please don't, it's a horrible practice, but go, you're our bottom 10% of students and we need to up our average. So you're gone, oh right? and then just leave what remains and your average goes up. That's kind of what they're doing. I understand where the hypothesis came from. I think John's answer was great. Like, what you would potentially
why would you do that?
Does not make up for what you're gaining there. Like, this is not, it's not as granular, well, potentially, or maybe it's more granular. Like,
well, I'm pretty sure it doesn't work that way.
No.
Google understands that the web connection in some countries or some places is slower than in others. Mm-hmm. But that's not where Google is. Like you said, the lab data. I think that is of actual importance to Google. How fast is it when we measure it? I honestly don't think Google cares how fast your web is in a slow access area. A website is in a slow access area, given that your competitors is also very likely just as slow.
Yeah, and I think this person's hypothesis...
A narrow pipe is a narrow pipe for everyone.
Indeed, but I think their hypothesis would be if they're aggregating that data, then I can take
but
the advantage.
But they aren't, though. Google doesn't do that. Why would Google do that? That makes some sense.
And that's where it circles back. But I'm going to give the person a pass on, like, it's an interesting idea. Like, to me, anyway, I was like, oh, I don't know that I would have thought to do that if I was, like, looking at something that like looking at that specific metric that granularly. I don't know that I would have. There's some interesting tests you could probably run, but it's such a light signal. I don't even know what you would get from that. Like it's just not you'd be gaining so little that I'm not sure you would even know, which is, I think, even part of John's point going, even if we do, which he can't confirm or deny, do they use field data in that way? I would suspect they probably do as like a cross check versus their own data or something. Make sure that in the field, the site isn't a train wreck that's like somehow catering to Googlebot in a different way or something like that. But it's already a fair, like we know, it's like a tiebreaker metric. So now you're going with a marginal or almost negligible impact on a tiebreaker metric. Like you're getting so granular that almost anything else you could do on your website, probably literally anything else you could do, will be more important than that.
And as John said, if you're able to see that this is having an impact on your Core Web Vitals from this country, you're getting a lot of traffic from that country. Really want to get rid of it.
Right. Well, exactly. And I mean, if you really want to have some fun with that, if you had enough that it was going to impact you, maybe just build like a subdomain version of your site catering to that country and funnel it there, right? Like if you're really like, if that's the like tangent you're going down on, fine. Just like drop it somewhere else and just impact that one with just that country's impact, right? If you have enough that it matters that to block it, then it has enough that matters that you could move it and create a duplicate for just that country. Anyway, it's interesting because we've ended up talking about that specific test for quite a bit. And I don't know that I would have predicted that we would have.
Well, I think because it kind of reminded me of this other debate in the SEO industry, which I think was settled, but it seems to be up again. The use of the disavow tool.
Mm.
again, John Mueller has had to come out and say, look, when you're disavowing, you got to think of yourself going through a jungle with a machete and you're just hacking away. And I don't give me links from a domain. Give me the entire domain if it's that bad. This was reminiscent of Matt Cutts. He said pretty much the exact same thing, 10, 15 years ago. This isn't a scalpel, it's a machete. Do you still use this avow? Do you ever run across that?
I have, used it. And
recently?
I'll say in the last couple years, I've used it. I'm not one to go in. I haven't had a client under any sort of attack, backlink attack or anything. I do monitor for that and go, okay, if I see an unnatural spike, then I actually would. I'd go in and go, okay, somebody's trying to mess with things right now, so I'm going to go in and disavow all these new craptastic links. But I don't use it much anymore. I get what they're saying. One thing I think would have been good to have locked in on as well, or at least maybe given honorable mention, is John says whole domain. And I think that part could be misleading to people who might not know what they're doing. But then any other answer would have been misleading as well. What he's meaning is you go duck hunting with a shotgun, not a sniper rifle, right? Just fire it off, clear out as much as you can, right? That's what you're going to do here. Where I think technically what he's saying might be misleading is, to list an example, there's a whole bunch of very good subdomains hosted on WordPress. Bunch of them. The very good whole websites there. If you end up with some spam on a sub coming in from a subdomain on WordPress, it doesn't mean you need to block all of WordPress. You can block just the subdomain. And that's where I think just that you don't have to block a whole domain. It's actually a subdomain. It was just an oversight in wording. And I think it would have been misleading if he'd gone in different directions, like www and not non-www. You could have made things even more confusing. But for our listeners, that is one distinction I would make is, yes, you are going in with a machete, right? You're just clear it out. But if you found a bunch of crap links coming in from a subdomain on an otherwise good domain, it was just some user-generated content, and they just happen to be spammers on Viagra sites that are just linking and they've scraped your content or something, just blocking that subdomain. You don't have to block the entire domain and clear everything. It's just to make sure you've got a catch-all that's going to catch everything coming from that location and that site owner. That's there just you my two bits anyway.
Well, I think people are still investing time trying to use disavow like a scalpel. That's the impression I get from the fact that John devoted any time to answering on that at all. Don't do that. It's not useful, really. But if you do have a problem domain, thwart it.
Indeed. And I think it is good advice. And but realistically, all you have to do is think about it, right? And go, if there's a link on this site and I want to say I don't want that, then it's probably a bad domain. Now, an exception I can think of, and this isn't brought up in here, but what if you've hired an SEO who went out and bought links, right? Just actually was purchasing them. And what if that SEO bought you a link on Forbes? I'm just picking. And you were just due diligence. I want to be a good citizen of the web. I'm going to completely disavow all of the links that my bad SEO purchased for me. So I'm going to disavow all of these. But what if you also have good links on the same domain? What if you did? Would you want to disavow those? No, you wouldn't. But you might want to be honest with Google and go, I don't want these counted because they weren't ethically attained. You probably wouldn't. I don't know that you would do that anyway if you were okay with the strategy to begin with. But
That's a weird thing. What if you're not penalized for them? That's the thing, eh? Why, and this is, I don't even know if this is an ethical question or just a strategic question, but why react to something that it could be a problem, but it's not a problem yet. And it might be a problem, but you don't know it's going to be a problem. That's a tough one. Why were you hiring those people to go and buy those links in the first place?
Right. And if you've got good rankings, do you want to sacrifice those right now? Right. Like, I mean, there's all sorts of questions that only your own tolerance for risk, like each business owner's tolerance for risk, is going to drive what the answer is. Right. Like, I'm not pretending there's a right or wrong. I know I wouldn't do it because my tolerance is low, because my clients appreciate that. Like, my clients don't want high risk strategies coming into play there. But some business owners are fine with that. Right. I mean, you've probably met some. I've met some. Nothing.
Oh, I've met some who want to, who very much want to court the risk. But I think, and this is probably the last one we can touch right now. Before it shows up, I've also met a bunch of business owners who want to keep something they had going that Google doesn't really support anymore. Have you seen an uptick in soft 404s in for your clients?
No, I haven't, but I know where you're going.
Okay, well, I've seen I have a number of fairly large e-com clients, and many of them, especially with the supply chain being really flaky, had rankings for products that are either out of stock or no longer being stocked at all, but you know, they might be stocked sometime next year when the supply chain gets back together again. Mm-hmm. And so they were getting good placements placements for pages relating to these items, but they just can't get these items into the country right now. And so they don't actually have them to ship out to their clients. So they have to put an out of stock bug or an out of stock symbol or whatever on every one of these pages. Mm-hmm. So this is what a soft 404 is. A real 404 is a file not found. Google went to make a request of something and didn't find it, so it's a 404. A soft 404 is expected information not found. And it's repeatedly not found. I mean, they'll excuse it if it happens, if you go out of stock once or twice. But if it happens every time they hit the page when they're re-rendering over and over again, they're going to give you a soft 404 and judge your entire domain against you got a bunch of them and they repeat over and over and over again. Those are likely the cause of soft 404s that SEOs are seeing, and Google ain't happy about it.
Right. And that makes sense.
Okay. So again, 404, file not found. Soft 404, expected information repeatedly not found.
Right. Seeing a no results found on a search page or something.
Dave, I know that you have a hard stop at the top of the hour, and that's about a minute and a half from now. So we're on our way out. But this was your first show in 2022. Next week, we got Danny Goodwin coming on his last day at SCJ. Mm-hmm. So that'll be interesting.
That will be.
2 weeks from now, we have the SEO Clarity guys coming back again with another massive industry study.
Awesome.
Last words of your first show of 2022.
You know, I wish this is going to be an interesting year. I think it's going to be a wonderful year. So just good luck. Buckle up, though. I think we're in for a lot of core updates this year. I'm just predicting we're going to have more core updates this year than we had last year.
Okay, friends, it is top of the hour. We've gone full clock. On behalf of Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. You've been listening to Webcology on WMR.FM. It is the 13th of January, 2022. Be safe. Get vaccinated and boosted. Rank well. Be kind to each other. Stick around the network. There's more great content coming up, and we'll talk to you next week.
Cool. Bye, everybody.
Yeah, I got to jump too. Sean has been trying to reach me in the last few minutes.
Cool. Cheers.
Big hugs. Talk to you guys later.
The opinions expressed in this WMR.FM program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMR.FM. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.